Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. We need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your callers from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being because we have with us a very special guest, Dr. Tenpenny. And Dr. Tenpenny is a physician, but she's been very concerned about what's happening as far as the government's program for vaccination and massive smallpox vaccination. She's testified before the recent commission that was called to determine whether or not we should have universal vaccination. Dr. Tenpenny, thank you so much for being with us.
Good evening, Stan. How are you?
I'm doing just fine, thank you. And, of course, I've heard about you for some time, and of course, with your work. And I know you've been on Joyce Riley's program and other programs. So can you bring us up to date? Where do we stand, and why is all this concern about smallpox? Is there really a threat from smallpox? Is this really an effort to get everybody all upset? Certainly we're told, we have been told at least for the last 30 years, if we can believe anything we've been told, there's no smallpox in the world. It's only, you know, in the Russian laboratories and the American laboratories, everything is under lock and key, nothing to worry about, and then suddenly one day we wake up and, oh my goodness, we're going to have a smallpox attack almost any day, and probably Saddam Hussein has it, and probably, you know, what's the reality of going on? Where is the truth?
Well, the problem is that nobody really does know the truth. And when I was at the CDC in Atlanta last week, that was one of the things that one of the speakers brought up from the CDC, was that the government needed to tell the truth. Because they, on the one hand, they act as though a smallpox break is inevitable and imminent. And they're doing that by ordering 300 million doses of the vaccine, spending $780 million to get the vaccine, and they've got all this hype that it's, like I said, right around the corner. But yet at the same time, they're not allowing people to really know the truth, and nobody's really saying, well, where is this going to come from? So not only are they're acting at one minute like it's inevitable, and the next minute like, oh, it's going to be somewhere off in the future. Like, for example, the policy that came down the pike after the final policy, after they had the town meetings, was, number one, they were not going to vaccinate the general public, which is a good thing. The second thing is that they are going to start to vaccinate a small number of first responders, about 15,000 people, starting in the fall, meaning it won't be until the new Acambus 2000 vaccine is eventually produced, which is the vaccine being made in England. So it will come out as an investigational new drug. The third thing is that if there is a smallpox outbreak, all bets are off as to how they're going to handle it. Now, one of the things that I said in my testimony, two things from what I just said. Number one, there are 65 different known biological warfare weapons. If you were a terrorist, would you pick smallpox, knowing that America has geared up to 300 million doses of smallpox vaccine, and you had 64 other equally as deadly types and probably more deadly types of infections than smallpox. The second thing is, since we've made it our public policy to let everybody know that we're not going to start vaccinating first responders until the fall, if a smallpox outbreak was imminent and inevitable, if you were a terrorist, you'd probably do it now. And nobody seems to have any feeling of what is going to be happening with that. So there's a lot of confusion, a lot of misinformation, maybe disinformation or non-information, but nobody really seems to know for sure.
All right. Well, of course, you know, since about 1980, you couldn't get the vaccine because they said it isn't necessary. We don't want you to have the vaccine. There's a danger inherent in the vaccine, which is true, certainly. But suddenly we have the government saying, well, we know what's best for you. You don't need it. And then they turn around and they say, well, maybe you do need it, or maybe we'll give it to the first responders, or and these would be the people who would work in emergency care, emergency facilities, the firemen, the policemen, things of that sort. Now, one of the things that disturbs me is so often they get these vaccines and they have no history at all. We don't know anything about their history or the possible contaminants in them, and they give them to millions or tens of millions of people. And this, of course, is the tragedy of the polio vaccine and the story there that's been suppressed for so many years. But what about this new smallpox vaccine? Traditionally, we've been, of course, giving people a vaccine that was basically a cowpox vaccine. What's this new vaccine? What's the track record? If they're going to give it to people, will this be totally experimental? Has it been tried? Do we know anything at all about it? Does it have a track record?
Dr. Stan, there were about 17 questions in there.
Well, just in 30 words or less, please. No, go ahead.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Go ahead. Do the best
right.
you can.
I mean, first of all, I think that people should know that vaccinia is a completely separate and different virus. It is really not the cowpox virus, and they made that clear at the CDC. Everyone is under the misconception that, well, this is cowpox, it's benign, it's been around for a long time, but the new vaccine, the vaccinia vaccine, is not cowpox vaccine. It's a completely separate and different virus, still in the orthopox family of viruses, but it's not cowpox.
Where did it come from then, and how did they make it? Did they make it genetically?
Well, it's in that I'm not sure if that's a genetically modified virus, but it's still in the orthopox family, so that if you get vaccinated with the vaccinia, supposedly, and they're not sure at what level, but supposedly it will cross-protect you from smallpox. Now, the old vaccine that's been around since 1982, the one that they stopped vaccinating people in the United States in 1977, and as a historical fact that I think is really important, is that the last case of smallpox in this country was in Texas in 1949. And I'll come back to that in a little bit about why that's important. But the old vaccine that they used to use was something called Dryvax, and that came from calf lymph. And that's the one that they've been vaccinating the CDC workers with over the years that have been handling this virus. Then we heard about the Avenis virus, the one that they found frozen. And then there's two brand new viruses that are going to be created. One is made from human fetal tissue and the other from monkey tissue.
All right, we're going to have to take a quick break here. And then when we get back, I'd just like you to elaborate on that because I think people have to know what we're dealing with. And, of course, the question is, will it be safe for the individual and for their family. So we'll be back here in just a moment with Dr. Tenpenny. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course we want to mention that we carry something called Phonopoly. And Phonopoly is a board game played like Monopoly, but it's not simply a game for fun like Monopoly, although it is as much fun as Monopoly. It's really to teach children and young adults and even old adults like me how to begin to think phonetically and spell phonetically and pronounce words phonetically. And, of course, it's not one board game. It's five board games and two bonus games. And we throw in a couple of books because there's been an organized effort for 50 years not to teach children to read phonetically when, of course, that means that reading was effective 200 years ago, and it still is effective today. But instead of that, they've dumbed down our children, and so many of them just can't read, which is why we have, according to the Department of Health and Human Services, some 96 partially or totally illiterate people in America today. Call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and order a Phonopoly set. And then, of course, we carry something called the Oregon Curriculum. It was put together by Dr. Art Robinson. He used it on his six children. And now there are 50,000 sets of this across America. It is 21 or 22 CDs with the entire curriculum that you need to educate your child with the tests and with the textbooks from first grade right up to graduation from college and, pardon me, from high school. And when Dr. Robinson's two oldest boys graduated from high school, they skipped the first 2 years of college and went right in as juniors in college. So basically, they've dumbed down the children. Here's a chance to circumvent that. According to Dr. Robinson, it took him about 15 minutes a day per child. Give us a call. It's available for $199.95, not per year, for the whole program. Give us a call at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Our four tape set on the JFK assassination includes an interview with Lee Harvey Oswald. Of course, it's not an interview that I did, but it is an interview, and you'll actually hear Lee Harvey Oswald talking before the time of the assassination. A two-hour interview with Colonel Fletcher Prouty, who was the liaison between the Pentagon and the CIA at the time of the assassination of the American president. And then, of course, my overall analysis of the reasons why President Kennedy was assassinated. There's so much information that has not been put out. And if you listen to this four-tape set, you will begin to understand that there are forces at work behind the scenes which have been able to confuse the American people about the reality of the murder of an American president. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, that's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask for the JFK assassination tapes. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I guess this afternoon, Dr. Tenpenny, and Dr. Tenpenny is a physician, but she's been very concerned about the vaccines, and she testified before the recent commission that was investigating this, and of course, she's been back to the CDC discussing this. So you were saying that this new vaccine is going to be created and grown in human fetal tissue. Is this going to be the vaccinia virus or some other virus?
Well, it's going to be the vaccinia virus is the base virus, but the culture, there's two different new vaccines. There's one called a Cambus 1000 that's going to be made from a tissue, from human fetal tissue culture. The a Cambus 2000 is also going to be made from monkey tissue culture. And those are both going to be ready for manufacture by this fall. I do believe that that's the one, that the Acambus 2000 is what they're going to use to vaccinate those 15,000 first responders. The 15,000 first responders, as you mentioned, will be police, fire, EMTs, paramedics. And they made a big deal about the fact that each vial of vaccine will vaccinate 500 people, and they didn't want to waste any because we had a finite supply. Now, part of the reason and one of the big concerns that I have about vaccinating the first responders is, first of all, this is going to be coming out as an investigational new drug. It will not have had any clinical trials except perhaps very small ones prior to vaccinating these first responders. And that is, and since they've passed that fast track law, but then, now there's a fast track law that any drugs or any vaccines related to bioterrorism can be pushed forward into human consumption and utilization with only two animal studies behind them, no human studies. So that means the first set of people who will be getting these drugs and vaccines will be guinea pigs. Now, of course,
are they going to let the people know that they are going to be guinea pigs and they're using them instead of doing the extensive trials that they should be doing? And they seem to be using this state of urgency so they can use humans as guinea pigs as they have in the past.
Right, and I'm sure that they'll have informed consent, but they'll have to sign off on any possible injury, and of course the drug companies will be covered from any liability. And that was one of the things that was brought up at the CDC meeting, was the fact that at the current level of threat, that the risk of the vaccine is worse than the risk of the disease. And one of the things the reasons why I do believe that they're not going to vaccinate the general public is that there are five types of side effects associated with the vaccine, four of which are potentially fatal in people that have immunosuppressed conditions, meaning things like HIV, cancer, organ transplants, insulin-dependent diabetics, those patients that are steroid-dependent, and we know how many people in America are steroid-dependent, either from asthma or all sorts of autoimmune diseases. So in order for those for people to get the vaccine, you have to have an antidote if you have a bad side effect. Well, the antidote is something called vaccinia immune globulin, or vaccine immune globulin, that is harvested from people who have had the vaccine. So it's what I believe, and many people believe, is that they're going to vaccinate those 15,000 first responders so then they can harvest their immune globulins from those 15,000 responders, so they've developed their vaccinia immune globulin stores, so when they start vaccinating the general public, they'll have something to as an antidote to treat severe side effects.
Well, this seems to me like a sort of a great scientific experiment like so many of the others that they've done without ever really telling the public what they're up to.
Well, yeah. Yes.
And of course, you know, this is what bothers me. We have people who really don't seem to have a moral conscience. Everything is in the name of silence, and the individual is simply no longer a patient, but a subject.
Yes, I do believe that's true.
All right, fine. Well, now, of course, are they going to be trying these vaccines in animals to see if they have a reaction?
Well, they're doing small human studies right now. I mean, keep in mind that there's four different vaccines that are going to be in the stock. And they're doing the old Dryvax, the old frozen vaccine that came from the 80s that, if you remember back about 2 or 3 months ago, was in the news, that Avenis happened to just find this vaccine in the bowels of its basement somewhere, which is just an extraordinary thing. I mean, there had to have been somewhere between 700 and 800 gallons of this vaccine that was in storage that had to have been under controlled conditions of nearly frozen temperatures since the 1980s, and they just sort of happened to find it. They didn't know it was there. Well, I mean,
that's the most incredible story that I ever heard. I think anybody who believes that probably is waiting for their WorldCom stock to come back again.
That's a great analogy.
Because, you know, the thing is that here, this is worth, I don't know how many tens of, or
millions.
Millions of dollars. Mm-hmm. And they didn't even know they had that. What sort of corporate structure is this? Or are they, once again, not giving us the whole truth? Do you have, you're on the front lines of this battle, do you have this feeling that really there's an awful lot of deception out there, that some of these people are not as dumb and naive as they would appear to be?
Oh, well, I don't believe that there's any mistakes, and I don't believe that there's any coincidences. And even though as vocal as I've been over the last month about getting this information out to many people, and I feel that thanks to people like yourself and Bill Boshears and Joyce Riley for radio programs and Joe Mercola on his website and Jeff Rentz on his website, I do believe that there are many million more people that are aware of this than would have been if I wouldn't have had access to great people like I just mentioned. Because I think that this would have just sort of passed through. And I'm not sure that we made any real impact in terms of what their policy turned out to be. I mean, their policy may have been very much what they had intended it to be in the first place, and these town meetings were nothing more than just some sort of a pseudo effort to see if people were going to react. But nonetheless, people are questioning, and people are now understanding that smallpox may not be that scary of a disease after all. In fact, at the CDC, they made a very big deal about the fact that the side effects reactions were probably more serious than the infection. And I had a sidebar with one of the physicians there and was talking to him about the fact that since the last case of smallpox in this country was 1949, and since smallpox is primarily a skin disease, and the JAMA 1999 article says that internal organs are rarely affected, what is really the cause of death of smallpox, and hasn't our technology and our medical care advanced to such a place that perhaps that 30% death rate that keeps being propagated through all the media really isn't true? And he sort of smiled at me and he said, well, that they have looked to see what the cause of death of smallpox really was, and no one really knows. It's a mystery. And that they think it has to do with some sort of immune reaction, and that quite probably they think that in even the most severe cases of smallpox, the death rate will be less than 3%.
Well, isn't that interesting? Well, we're certainly not getting that from the media. And of course, would you want to just briefly, I think for our listeners out there, they really don't understand why the smallpox vaccine is so dangerous. If we gave a million cases of that, if we gave a million doses, we're told that one person would die, but an awful lot of people would get encephalitis, wouldn't they?
Yeah, and what the actual side effect ratio is that for 1 million doses, 1 million vaccines that would be given, somewhere between 1 and 5 people would die, and the severe reactions would be 1 in 4,000, which is, you know, do the math on 280 million people. That's a lot. And there's also going to be a lot of people who will be contraindicated from even getting the vaccine, because if you've ever had eczema or had a case of eczema in your childhood, that's one of the contraindications for you even getting it.
All right, and then, of course, sometimes when you get the vaccinia virus, then you're going to infect other people with that, can't you?
Yes, exactly, and particularly those with the history of eczema. In fact, if Dr. Stan, if you and I were living together and you had had eczema sometime in your life and I got the vaccine, I could spread that virus to you and you would have a more severe life-threatening case of a vaccine reaction than if you would have received the vaccine directly yourself. So that secondary contamination, they call that vaccinia exonatum, is potentially deadly.
All right, and I think that that is one reason why at least the doctors on this commission decided that we were not going to vaccinate everybody, and I think that that is probably one of the few smart things I've heard in some time, because, of course, here's a threat. We don't even know it's a threat, and we don't even know if the terrorists have any smallpox, and supposedly it's all been kept under lock and key, and of course, there's so much hype out there, so much effort to frighten people, and they're doing a pretty good job of it. And are you up at all on the anthrax vaccine, the recent decision? Now they're not going to vaccinate all the military. They're just going to have it locally for the people or for the first responders. Have you looked into that at all?
I really, in the last month, have not had time to follow that. I do know what you're talking about. I also know the economics behind why they're not doing the anthrax vaccine that people don't generally talk about.
What's that now?
Well, is the fact that that 200 pilots left, and it cost almost $6 million to train one pilot. So because 200 pilots in the reserve left, that was $1.2 billion in tax dollar training that walked out the door.
They weren't going to take the vaccine. We're going to be back here, and when we get back, of course, we'll welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here at 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and a couple of things I want to mention here. One of them, of course, is if you use your telephone and make long-distance calls, we hope that many of you will want to change your long-distance carrier to Promise Vision. Well, why should you do that? Well, I defy you to call MCI or to call AT&T and try to get a live person on the line. It's really almost funny when you call because, of course, they got a game. We're going to keep you on this line so long you're going to get discouraged and hang up. You call 866-448-5631. That's 866-448-5631. Change your long-distance carrier over to Promise Vision. And first of all, you'll have a live person. You'll get good service. The rates are competitive, and 15% of whatever your long-distance charges are will come to Radio Liberty to help us do what we do. So give them a call at 866-448-5631, and I think you'll be as happy with Promise Vision as we are. And then, of course, we want to mention the Miracle 2 soap products, which we carry. We think that they're very good. We've used them for about a year now. And, of course, we can't make any medical claims for them. We can only say that many people have used the products, and they say that it's helped their rashes and other skin conditions. Once in a while, you'll have somebody who can't use the product. But out of the hundreds and hundreds of people I know who've used it, I can only think of two. And most of the people are just so happy with it, and it seems to have so many uses around the house. I know my wife off the sinks with it, and the ants certainly don't like to come back again. We've used it to spray the white flies on our product, on our tomato plants and our other plants. It's not approved for that sort of thing, but it certainly seems to help. Give us a call at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Ask about the Miracle 2 soap products. If you'd like to order an introductory supply, or if you'd like the products, give us a call. Have you ever wondered about the boys we left behind in Vietnam, in Korea? Did you ever know that we left 25,000 American boys behind in Russia, in Siberia, at the end of the Second World War? Have you ever wondered what really happened at Oklahoma City, what really happened with TWA 800 that went down off the eastern coast about a year ago? Well, ladies and gentlemen, all of the subjects are well covered in a fascinating book by Craig Roberts entitled The Medusa File. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, order The Medusa File. Actually, Craig Roberts was a police officer working on the Oklahoma City bombing. Now, this book has been suppressed very effectively across America. It's self-published, but I promise you that there's no other book I know that'll give you more contemporary history, frightening history that every American needs to know. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR now.
Oh,
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Dr. Tenpenny, and our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. Do you have a website or any information you'd like to get out?
Yeah, I do. We have a website. It's called NMA Seminars, like Nancy Mary Alfred Seminars.com. That stands for New Medical Awareness Seminars. And there's information on there about some of the tapes and things that we sell, about newsletters that we have. There's going to be an ongoing a set of articles that I've written and things that will keep people updated and informed on this issue on a very regular basis.
All right, fine. That's NMA Seminars, like
New Medical Awareness.
Awarenessseminars.com. Uh-huh. All right, fine. And
We have a phone number where they can call if they want to talk to a live person, like you were talking about on your radio break there. A live person is 440-268-0897.
Well, I get so irritated when I call MCI or AT&T. 440-268-0897.
Right.
Okay,
right.
Fine. And so we've been trying to get MCI to stop billing us for 6 months, and they keep sending us bills, and then after 30 minutes you get somebody on the line, they'll say, oh, we're terribly sorry about that. It won't happen next month, and it's been going on for 6 months. We're just going to send it back and say, because I don't even know that the MCI is going to be around. They're tied somehow into WorldCom, and they're in real trouble.
Oh, wouldn't that be interesting?
Right. Well, perhaps maybe there's an MCI WorldCom and there's an MCI. I don't know how it fits together. Anyway, I do know they've been cooking the books for a long period of time. We got Roger calling from Allentown. Hi, Roger. Any thoughts?
Yes. Hello, doctors Tenpenny and Stan. There's a whole bunch of questions here. Now, this is not the least, perhaps, of the questions, but...
Just one question at a time.
Yeah, okay. I wonder if... Now, the Bible says your sin will find you out. And it just... One of the questions first is, it begs the question with the use of the human fetal tissue, whether this could precipitate the prions, which are believed to be implicated in Creutzfeldt-Jakob or mad cow disease, just as when cows eat cows.
Okay, your question is, would the fetal tissue cells possibly have anything to do with prions? Is that your question?
Yes.
Okay, fine. Do you have any thoughts on that, Dr. Tenpenny?
Not particularly. This particular line of fetal cells that they're using, the MCR-5 cells, have been around for a long time. In fact, it's the same cells that are used to create the MMR vaccine, the measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine, and also the chickenpox vaccine.
All right, fine. And, of course, what about the monkey vaccine? You mentioned that they were going to... Is this a monkey tissue culture? Is this from live monkeys, or is this a long-standing tissue culture? And do they have the viruses out of it? Because we know there were at least 40 monkey viruses in the original monkey vaccines.
No, it's not a monkey vaccine. It's
no,
monkey.
But I mean, you said it was a culture for monkeys? This
monkey
was the other
tissue.
One.
You what? Know, like the Vero cells, which are the monkey tissue cells.
All right.
And there's no guarantee that there's viruses out of them, just like all of the viruses that are contained inside the bovine tissues that are other vaccines are also cultured in.
All right, fine. Now, which of the vaccines are actually cultured in bovine?
There are several. Diphtheria is one, and I don't know the other ones off the top of my head, but there are different types of vaccines. I could actually look them up and get back to you.
All right, fine. So anyway, did you have another question, Roger?
Yeah, and of course on those matters, we have a total lack of any kind of longitudinal studies which would bear out any of this plus or minus. Now here, we're asked by the same people pushing this smallpox vaccine, we're asked to swallow a whole series of logical non sequiturs, which must be true for this vaccine to have an overall benefit.
What was your question?
Okay, first we're told that, contrary to your correction, I appreciate it, that the smallpox is not near as deadly as it's made out to be. And even if we have a transgenic or otherwise altered strain, that would not per se be overall deadlier vaccine. It may be a higher initial susceptibility, yes. And I think this hyper-weaponized strain business may have more to do with the delivery vehicle, the dropletizing bomb, let's say, than the deadliness of the the virus.
Okay, did you have a question?
Yeah, well, I'm thinking if the virus is, say, altered, it can be altered so much that it's no longer infectious to human beings beyond a small variation.
Well, the problem with your thinking there is, I mean, a lot of what you said is potentially true, that what the weaponization is that they've talked about is weaponization with smallpox as in terms of aerosolization, because smallpox is a pretty heavy little virus, and it falls quickly to the ground, and that's why it's not very highly contagious. In fact, one of the things they brought out at the CDC was that one of the scenarios of if a terrorist had infected themselves with smallpox and had broken out with pustules all over their body and walked through the streets of New York City touching people, spreading the disease to millions, that entire scenario is purely fiction. It would never happen. I mean,
yeah,
because smallpox isn't spread that way. Now, that's the one thing. And so they're talking about weaponization in terms of spread. However, genetic modification is different. And there are some thoughts because the vaccinia virus has been known to already be genetically combined with various types of virus, including hepatitis B, influenza virus, and the HIV virus. They have already genetically engineered it so it can be combined with those.
Now you're talking about the vaccinia, and the vaccinia,
right,
of course, is the one that we use for vaccination,
for
entirely
smallpox.
Different than the variola, which is a smallpox virus, right?
Right.
Right.
And so there are ways that you could also genetically combine it with, say perhaps Ebola. And so that is another big black dark hole of what you were talking about, assuming all of these things might happen in order for us to be exposed, and therefore we should consider this vaccine. You're absolutely correct in your thinking along those lines.
And, of course, Dr. Ken Alibek, who was the number two man in the BioPreparate division of the Soviet Union's Biological Warfare Unit, has talked about the combining of the smallpox and Ebola. Whether it's true or not, we don't know. Some people say it couldn't be done. He insists that it could, and certainly he is a very, very accomplished scientist. Now, do you have anything else you wanted to ask him, Roger?
Well, I'm a little foggy there. Are you implying that this could well have multiplied the deadliness than these altered forms?
Yes, absolutely.
But the vaccine won't have any protection from that.
That's what I thought.
Right.
They'd be so different from the vaccine antibodies that...
Right.
Okay. God bless you all.
Okay, fine. Thanks so much, Roger.
Thank
and our telephone number again is 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Our guest today is Dr. Tenpenny, and of course he's from NMASeminars.com. And the telephone number for a real live person is 440-268-0897. Well, this committee that was set up, were they set up specifically for smallpox, or were they looking into so many of these other different types of bacteriological warfare agents, which our government did develop, and, of course, are concerned that other countries may have developed as well. I'm talking about tularemia, Q fever, plague, and this whole, about 60 different diseases out there that can be used to incapacitate or to kill the enemy population.
No, it was purely smallpox. In fact, if anybody got up from the audience, because they did offer time for public comment, so anybody out there in America could have gone to these meetings. In fact, it was a little disappointing that there were not as many people there as what I was hoping there would have been. But the moderator of the public comment time made people stick really closely to just discussion of smallpox. And so when these other things, as you just mentioned, Dr. Stan, came up, they were not addressed. It was an absolute silence about it.
All right, fine. Well, of course, sometimes you have to keep a meeting going. I've run enough meetings to know that, where you get off on all sorts of side issues. Well,
but I did bring that up three different times, though, about the fact, why would we mass vaccinate our general public against smallpox when there are all these other things to pick from that we don't have a vaccine for?
And, of course, the thing is, why have we spent so massive amounts of money and, of course, bought these products, and we ordered all these, and then, of course, they find all the old products, so we really didn't need all the new products, and we're spending hundreds of millions of dollars like like money is going out of style. And I believe that we should be prepared. And I certainly have no objection to being prepared to vaccinate. Haven't they found that they can use some of the old vaccine and dilute it 1 to 5, and it gets almost as good a response as you would anticipate, without diluting it?
Yeah, that's true. But there's some real misconceptions about smallpox, though, Dr. Stan, that I think that people need to know. One of the things, like I just said, is that smallpox is not extremely contagious once someone has it. It's really not. And there is no prodromal phase. So it's not like for example, with chickenpox, people can be exposed to chickenpox, can be contagious, and can walk around getting other people infected with chickenpox before they break out in the rash 3 to 4 days after they've been exposed. That does not happen in smallpox. So if there was a smallpox, a bomb that went off and they said, oh dear, that contains smallpox, those people that were exposed to that aerosolization have approximately 15 to 17 days of an incubation period. So during that 17-day period of time, when the time that they've been exposed, if they get a fever, that is suggestive that they may be developing smallpox. If they don't get a fever, even though you've been exposed, you're not getting the infection. So after that prodrome of 17 days, at that point in time, most people will spike a temperature between 102 and 103. They're sick, they take to their house, they go to bed. They're not out spreading that around to anybody else. It's not spread by aerosolization because part of the disease is not cough, so people don't spread it like people that have the flu or have a cold and can spread the virus by coughing. That's not part of smallpox. So people go to their house, and it is until the point in time they do not become infectious to where they can spread the disease to other people until they break out in the rash, until they start developing these little things that look like little pus pockets all over your body. It's only at that point in time that you can become infectious. And you will only spread it to other people if you have been in close personal contact with that person for a minimum of 7 days. And they define close personal contact as 6 to 7 feet. So there's a lot of things in there. First of all, because you're exposed doesn't mean you're going to get it. Second of all, even if you get a fever doesn't necessarily mean you're going to break out in the rash. If you break out in the rash, you're still only going to spread it to other people if you've been in close contact with them for a minimum of 7 days.
All right. Well, I think it's so important that people understand it is not as infectious as we've been led to believe. Well, we're going to have to take another break here. And, of course, when we get back, we'll welcome your calls right here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, this is a time we have to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we, of course, on the air 5 hours a day. We do 6 different audiences every week, and we, quite frankly, need your help to do what we're doing. We have a unique opportunity now. We're starting a new Saturday program. We'll get Dr. Tenpenny on that one of these days, and that'll be heard on 6 stations. It'll be syndicated, and we're hoping that as it gets organized, that you'll go to your local radio station and ask them if they'll be willing to carry this on Saturday morning. And, of course, there'll be places for their advertisements. We're really excited about the opportunity of syndicating one of our programs in an organized way across America. Because you're going to hear things here at Radio Liberty you're only going to hear on a very, very few other programs across America, and certainly never from Barbara Walters, Dan Rather, or Tom Brokaw. So, of course, if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family for a suggested gift of $20 a month or more, really as much as you can afford, you'll get our 4 best tapes of the month, you'll get our monthly newsletter, but more than that, you'll be helping us do what we do. We suggest that you copy our newsletters, distribute them. We suggest that you tell other people about our website, which is RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. And you can get our newsletters there. You can, of course, pull down our archive programs. This program will be archived there for 60 days. But, of course, if you'd like a free copy of my newsletter, the latest one deals with one of the most carefully kept secrets in America today. It has to be kept secret, because if you knew the truth of this secret, why, of course, you would never trust anything that the CDC says again. So give us a call at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for a June newsletter. We'd be glad to send you one if you haven't had one before. We hope you'll subscribe, but we'd be glad to give you a free copy. Just give us a call at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. We have a brand new video today on the Oklahoma City bombing. It's called Oklahoma, What Really Happened. And of course, it consists of a lot of never-before-seen video footage. Now, it was seen in Oklahoma City immediately following the bombing of the Murrah Building, but blacked out across America. And in this footage, you're going to see the commentators talking about the other bombs that were in the building at the time of the initial bombing. We're told, of course, that Timothy McVeigh acted independently. We're told many things by the media, but wherein does the truth lie? Oklahoma City, What Really Happened, it will give you the opportunity to see long-suppressed video footage of what really transpired. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for Oklahoma City, What Really Happened. Well, Dr. Stan, back here at Radio Liberty, and our special guest this afternoon is Dr. Tenpenny, who has attended these meetings and is trying to keep people abreast of what's happening. And you really need to get the information. You can go to our website and get it. You can attend the seminars. Tell us about the seminars, Dr. Tenpenny. What happens there? Why should people be going to your seminars? Because I know you're giving them all across America.
Well, yes, I am, Dr. Stan, and it's we just had a really wonderful seminar a weekend before last in Chicago, and it's for both parents and also for healthcare practitioners to learn the truth behind what the CDC really says about vaccines. And it's all the vaccines that we talk about. We talk about DPT, the diphtheria, tetanus, pertussis. We talk about measles, mumps, rubella. Talk about the Hib. Talk about Prevnar. I do a special section now because of all the current events that's going on with smallpox. We talk about that. And we also talk about how to treat vaccine-injured patients and what can we do in our clinic to treat autistic children and the types of successes that we're getting using the protocols we're using.
Are you using a nutritional approach?
We use a combination of allergy elimination, nutrition, cranial sacral therapy, and mercury detoxification.
All right. Well, I mean, this is such a tragedy because, of course, autism is just exploding, not only in California, but across the nation. And it seems to be so many of the parents will say, my child was perfectly healthy till we went in and we got our MMR vaccine and Hib and three or four others at one time. Because, of course, that's what the doctor wanted to do, is just give all these vaccines at one time. And a few days later, why, it was a different child. Have you heard that story?
I hear that story, sadly, almost every day.
And, of course, the great tragedy is that they insist on giving so many vaccines to our children all at one time and, of course, just bombarding their immune systems where they're not prepared for it.
No, not at all. And if you get all of the different vaccines that are both recommended and required, all of them, by the time your child's 6 months of age, you will have had 51 different vaccines injected. And by the time you start school, it'll be 77. Because keep in mind that when you get a DPT, diphtheria, tetanus, and pertussis, that's three different vaccines. It just happens to be combined in one shot. MMR, measles, mumps, and rubella, that's all three different vaccines in one shot, and so on. And all of the insult that happens to those that immune system. You know, I have this conversation almost every day in my office. And you as a physician yourself, maybe you have some insight into this. What do you think that it would take? What would we need to do in America to get physicians to start to think again?
Unfortunately, the physicians are in a situation where we are required to do really almost what we're told to do. You do what everybody else does, and you're not going to get into problems. And it doesn't matter whether sometimes harm is done. As long as everybody else is doing it, it's perfectly all right. And it's insanity, and good people feel very badly about this. And I know that some physicians refuse to vaccinate their own children.
Mm-hmm.
And yet in their practices, they're required to vaccinate yours. And there's something wrong with this picture.
Mm-hmm. And I don't think that, And I think that that's a misconception on the part of physicians, because I don't think they are required to vaccinate in their practices.
But, of course, I mean, you just try to buck the system, and you know, you can get into real problems. We had here a case in California where a doctor took a child off of Ritalin and treated them with herbs and medicines and spices, and the child was doing fine. But, of course, the people in work for the Child Abuse Agency came after him because he'd taken that child off of this drug, which will stunt their growth and, you know, shrink their brain and does all sorts of horrible things to the children. And they went after his medical license because he had the audacity to take this child off of Ritalin after some school nurse had put the child on the Ritalin. I mean, doctors are really on the defensive today. If they could only do what is right for their patients instead of being forced to do what they're told to by the hospital staff, by the medical board, certainly by the insurance companies, if doctors were answerable to their patients rather than all these extraneous forces, we wouldn't have the problems we do. And then, of course, we have to have people who are really dedicated to taking care of their patients because they've converted medicine from a profession to a business.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it is still the most noble profession of all. And I loved it. But, you know, many of us who are the older doctors who are my era are so saddened to see what's happening today and how the attitude has changed. And, you know, we used to work 80, 90, 100 hours a week, and we never thought anything at all about it.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, today, everybody wants to work from 8 to 5. Somebody has called in and asked, is there a safe combination of the MMR vaccine? How do you feel about MMR?
Well, I guess to address, is there a safe combination of MMR?
Or that was the question. And your answer, I assume, would be no.
Correct. Okay. I think the safest possible, if you have to, is to do individual vaccines.
In other words, you give them measles, but why are we, in heaven's name, vaccinating girls for mumps? Why are we vaccinating boys for rubella?
That's a good question. I mean, the conventional thinking is that you don't want the little boys to have rubella so that if they go to school and they come in contact with a teacher that is pregnant, you want to annihilate the pool of the virus so that everybody is protected. But see, the thing is with little girls getting the rubella vaccine is that the MMR, they know that the antibody protection wears off by the time they're about 13 or 14. So that's why they are requiring now a second MMR at junior high. And I do believe what's going to happen is they're probably going to have to require another one into their 20s instead of just letting kids have rubella when they're a kid and then have lifelong immunity.
All right. Tell me, what do you think of the meningitis vaccine that they're telling college students to take? Is that a good or a bad idea?
I think that that's a travesty. I think that the one thing that people don't know about the meningitis vaccine is that there's 4 strains of bacteria in that vaccine. And the most common type of meningitis is only about 50% covered by the vaccine, number one. And number two, the coverage in the vaccine is only for 2 years. It's only a 2-year vaccine.
Well, I know that many students are being told, well, you can't enter college unless you have your hepatitis B and your meningitis shots. That's required to get into college. What do you think about requiring children to have a hepatitis B vaccine before they go to college?
Again, I think that that is assuming that everybody is going to be an IV drug abusing prostitute.
Or homosexual.
And going to engage in all those activities. And that it really has no basis in reality. And I'm waiting for the first lawsuit for somebody to challenge a university system that particularly is a state school that is requiring these vaccines, because if it's a state school, that means they've been licensed by the state. And if you're in a state where you have a philosophical or a medical exemption, I do not see how those universities can not abide by the state laws of recognizing those exemptions. And I'm really surprised that somebody hasn't tried to push that legally so far.
Well, I think that maybe that's the only way we're going to do it, because we have a public health service that thinks that vaccines are going to solve all the problems of mankind. And all of that, they've created some terrible, terrible problems. And for those of you who really would like to know the secret that's been kept for 40 years from the American people, you call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and get a copy of our latest newsletter, the June newsletter, specify the June newsletter. And I promise you, you will never, never, never look at the world through the same eyes again. Have you read Edward Schurter's book, The Health Century?
I'm sorry?
Have you read Edward Schurter's book, The Health Century?
No, I haven't.
Well, I'll send you a copy of my latest newsletter. Then it's based upon a secret that the Public Health Service has had to conceal from the American people, because they knew that if the American people ever knew the truth, they would, of course, reject these vaccine programs. And of course, the scientists behind them say, we just want to help. And yet, look at the number of incidents of autism, and what about diabetes and autoimmune disease and all these other things which are skyrocketing, and the children are getting so many vaccines?
Well, two things about that. One is when you were talking about how so many vaccines, one of the things that they talked about at the CDC last week, two things. One is they are now going to, they're recommending the flu vaccine for children ages 6 to 23 months. And if you're 9 years of age and if you hadn't had a flu vaccine yet, you're supposed to get a double dose. The second thing is that they're going to be doing more and more and more vaccines into the adolescent age group. So now they're going to start scheduling vaccines for things like a second pertussis shot, a human papillomavirus. All of the sexually transmitted vaccines that are coming down the pike are all going to be given in the 13 to 18 year age group. And they were talking very much about the more vaccines that are going to be developing for adolescents, and we're going to vaccinate them more, as we should, they said, quote unquote. We need to vaccinate them more. So, excuse me, parents need to be aware that just because their kids are out of the elementary age school level, that there's more and more vaccines that are going to be coming down the pike.
I talked to Dr. Kenneth Alabak, the number two man of the Soviet Bioreparate program prepared for. And he told me that he had taken vaccines for 56 different products. He said, I'm allergic to everything. You can't vaccinate people for everything, or you'll make them so allergic they'll be allergic to themselves like I am, were his very words to me. Hey,
wow.
Dr. Tenpenny, we're out of time. Would you come on some of our other programs and talk to our different audiences? We'd love to have you.
I certainly would be very delighted, Dr. Stan. Thank you so much for having me.
God bless you. Thank you so much, and thank you so much for being ready for caring.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Good evening.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I hope you enjoyed the program. And really, if you want an amazing, amazing story, you'll want to get our latest newsletter, and if you should be subscribing to it. But if you're not, and you'd like a free copy, because it deals with the secret about vaccinations that they've had to conceal from the American people, because they knew if they ever learned the truth about this, why they would, of course, never trust any public health official again. So, right now, this is the time when we have to ask you to pray for America and pray for revival. And remember, if America doesn't turn back to God, God is going to turn his back on America forever. And so we ask you to pray for our country and pray for revival, to pray for our ministers. But please remember to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. Well, we're going to be gone for a couple of days. We'll be back with you Friday, off to Colorado to give a talk there for 4th of July. But until Friday, may the Lord be with you.
him